understand your words. I pray that you'd help us to be faithful to your words and to recognize that this, as Paul said 2,000 years ago, about this present evil world. Help us to be faithful during this time of apostasy and wickedness. In Jesus' name, amen. Several years ago, there was, I don't know if it was a study in a college campus, and they tried to analyze people, and their conclusion was that 3% of the population are inherently good, trying to do something good to help people. And then they, just 3%. Okay, and then they also concluded there are 3% that are inherently evil, that they have ill intentions for anybody and everybody. And then the 94% are between those 3%, and they're trying to jockey for that leadership of that 94%. And I think generally that's about true. We don't realize the American Revolution, that it was really 3% that got the 94% moving forward to help this country. And people say we established our independence. Not really, in a way. And it wasn't that we really rebelled against England. It's that the King George, that 3% evil, threw the colonies off. And when they did that, they were forced to declare their independence. And the Revolutionary War was actually an act of self-defense. That's a whole different topic or interesting study. I read a book years ago titled The Myth of the American Revolution. It was published by Bob Jones University. And they talk about a very interesting law passed by King George that most historians overlook. So it gives a different viewpoint of the American Revolutionary War. Okay, now in Ezekiel 8, you have the extreme 3% bad. And in Ezekiel 9, you have the 3% good. Okay, so in the tribulation time period, often it's taught that people who take the mark of the beast die and go to hell. Okay, or the number or the name. A lot of times people don't distinguish between the mark, the name, and the number. There are three things that are given in Revelation 13, 18. Mark, name, number. Okay, the number we know is 666. The name is questionable. Could be Judas Iscariot, whatever. Mark, that's different. Okay, that seems to be an approval or of some type. Okay, and when I ran through those passages maybe a year ago, I looked at every passage where it had the mark of the beast, and it says the ones who had the mark and worshipped the beast went to hell. That implies, what happens if a person, when they're forced to take the number against their will? The implications of those passages, if you look them up, is that, okay, a person takes the mark or the name, and they're trying to survive economically, but when it says, and worshiped, that implies voluntary worship of the beast, and that is where they're doomed to hell. Okay, again, I'm not going to say it's a hard, fast rule, and thank God, I hope nobody in this room has to worry about that. If you're lost, you might have to, but and that takes us back to Ezekiel 8 and 9, where in Ezekiel 9, there's a mysterious seal, seems to be invisible, placed upon people who sigh and or cry over the sins of the people. That's that 3% good. And Ezekiel 8 would be that group that would be in the realm of worshiping the beast, taking the mark and worshiping of Revelation. And that would be that 3%, probably vast majority more, in the tribulation time period. So Ezekiel 8 is the dark side, and Ezekiel 9 is the reaction of the righteous, okay, about the sins of the generation. So we're going to try to go through Ezekiel 8. I don't know if we're going to get into 9. So these are some things that go on behind the scenes that hopefully you and I are not privy to. Some people do. If they get this far down, they rarely recover. But Ezekiel chapter 8, it says, it came to pass in a 6th year and a 6th month. Okay, so we got 2 sixes in the 5th day of the month. As I sat in mine house. Okay, he's in his house in Babylon, in Iraq. And the elders of Judah sat before me. So I don't know how many that is. It's like the elderly leadership that went to, that were taken to Babylon, that the hand of the Lord God fell there upon me. Okay, that's one of 7 occurrences in Ezekiel where the hand of the Lord God fell upon him. And this will be the 4th occurrence. So you have it 1 verse 3, chapter 3, 14, 3, 22, 8, 1, and then the next one is clear to 33, 22. So this is a pretty large gap in there. The hand of the Lord fell there upon me. It's an Old Testament phrase, generally speaking. And then it says, then I beheld, and lo, a likeness as the appearance of fire. So he's not quite certain what he's seeing. It's like something, it's like fire, but it's a being standing there. And it says, from the appearance of his loins even downward fire, and from his loins even upward as the appearance of brightness as the color of amber. Now that was mentioned back in chapter 1, 1 verse 4. And that there is called visions of God in chapter 1 verse 4. So here you have Ezekiel, you got elders in front of him, and I don't know if they saw what he saw, but he is describing an Old Testament appearance, it seems to be of Christ. Then it says, and he put forth the form of an hand and took me by a lock of mine head. Okay, so if it's Jewish customs, he would have had long hair, a bunch of it, bushy, black and bushy like Jesus. Okay, and so he grabbed him by the hair. This is a hair-raising experience. And he picks him up. Okay, and the Spirit lifted me up between the earth and the heaven. So up in between the heaven, what's heaven? Genesis 1 verse 8, the firmament is called heaven. Genesis 1:8, that's what he called it. So he's suspended in the air in what we would call first heaven, or the Bible implies first heaven. And so in that air, in that activity, that's where most of the satanic things are taking place, in that air. So he's up in that realm. Okay, the Spirit lifted me up between the earth and heaven and brought me in the visions of God to Jerusalem. So now he's like a television screen or some type, and he's over in Iraq, so 400 to 500 miles away, and now he's looking into Jerusalem. Okay, and this is just about 2 or 3 years before the 3rd military campaign of Babylon coming in. And he's going to take him to the door of the inner gate that looketh toward the north. Okay, the door of the inner gate of the Jewish temple. And we're going to see how bad the Jewish temple is becoming prior to the destruction. Now, remember in Daniel 10, Daniel has an experience there where he's fasting for 21 days. It's not a complete fast. It seems to be a fast from pleasant bread, it says. Okay, so not a strict, hardcore fast from food. And he's praying about something, and 21 days later, an angel came and gave him the answer. But then that angel said that Michael had to help him. It's like he got detoured or he got detained by a devil, a fallen angel, and he couldn't shake him loose until Michael showed up, and then Michael booted him out. But it took him 21 days. That's quite a wrestling match. And so now if Daniel would have stopped praying that certain prayer in that 21 days, would he have gotten the answer? I don't know. But that seems to imply our prayers are important. Okay? If you get involved in court, if you're the plaintiff, and if you get a judgment, okay, that don't mean anything per se, really. And you could actually go to court and file a case and pay for the fee. Back when I did that last, it was $150. And that case will just sit in there indefinitely until the plaintiff moves the court. It'll just stay stagnant. And so the plaintiff moves the court to do something, okay, and then the court responds. I believe our moving the court of heaven is our prayers. Okay, so we make a motion to God in our prayers. Now, the devil's crowd is doing the same thing. Okay, there's a fellow flying an airplane. A fellow sat next to him didn't take a meal because he said he was fasting. Well, when you see somebody said, I'm not eating because I'm fasting, the assumption would be, oh, wow, this is probably a dedicated Christian or something. I mean, most people nowadays think fasting is McDonald's, fast food or something like that. Okay, and so this gentleman struck up a conversation with what he is assuming to be a Christian. Oh, are you a Christian? No, I'm a Satanist. Oh, and that sure put a damper on the conversation. Why are you fasting? Oh, we're praying. And what are you praying for? We're praying for the fall of 3,000 fundamental preachers, pastors. That's what we're praying for. Really? Last year we met our goal. This year we're ahead of the game. And it appears to me that God moves according to our prayers, and if we're not praying, then God doesn't move. And if the devil's crowd is praying harder than our crowd, then they're going to gain ground against God's kingdom. Okay, so in Ezekiel 8, this is the ground, this is how they pray. Okay, this is how they pray to their God. And it's amazing, their praying to their God is being done in the temple of God. When we were in Colorado Springs, one of the teenagers in the church had a brother that was a Satanist. And his brother said that when you go to the satanic service, worship service, it's the same man of the Catholic Church performing the service, the priest and a Satanist. Now that's Manitou Springs. Manitou Springs is kind of known to be the number one Satanist place in America. It goes back to the Indian heritage of the Garden of the Gods there and the god Manitou, and it's pretty heavy there. But this context is in the Jewish temple. And in the Jewish temple, it says, where was the seat of the image of jealousy which provoked to jealousy? So some kind of a statue image. Now, you can go to pretty much any Catholic church, and you can pretty well find symbolism and idols toward the devil. Okay, that's understandable. Okay, because that's Satan's seat is probably below the Vatican City, the smallest nation on earth that is a religion and a government at the same time. So that would be the most likely candidate. That's pretty well understood from a Bible believer's perspective. But in a Jewish temple, the place where the Jews should be meeting their God, and it's now got a probably a Baphomet sitting in there. You know, that's the God of the Freemasons. Okay, at this time, what was going on in the Jewish temple? If you would, look in 2 Kings 23, verse 7. Okay, so if Ezekiel was about, in this, when he got this vision, is about 2 to 3 years away from the third military campaign destroying of Jerusalem. Now, this is the last great revival, the last great moving of God in the Jewish, in the Judah, was under the King Josiah. King Josiah was a buddy of Jeremiah. So they were buddies. They were friends. Okay, and so Josiah had a great restoration to Judah. A restoration to God. But look what he did where he cleaned up the Jewish temple. 2 Kings 23, verse 5. Okay. Well, you can see in verse 4, he commanded Hilkiah the high priest. Okay, Hilkiah the high priest. I'm wondering, is that Jeremiah's dad? I'm going to look real quick. Jeremiah 1. It does appear to be so. Jeremiah 1, verse 1. Okay, so that appears to be Jeremiah's dad. So he commanded the high priest and the priest of the second order and the keepers of the door to bring forth out of the temple of the Lord all the vessels that were made for Baal and for the grove and for the host of heaven. And he burned them without Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron and carried the ash of them unto Bethel. And he put down the idolatrous priest whom the kings of Judah had ordained to burn incense in the high places in the cities of Judah and in the places thereof around about Jerusalem. Them also that burned incense unto Baal to the sun and to the moon and to the planets. Okay, that's the only time the word planets found in the Bible. You can see how it's written. It implies that's another way of saying stars. Not what we think. Sun, moon, and stars. Okay, but it says planets, and to all the hosts of heaven. And he brought out the grove from the house of the Lord without Jerusalem unto the brook Kidron, burned it in the brook Kidron, stamped it small to powder, and cast the powder thereof upon the graves of the children of the people. And he brake down the houses of the Sodomites that were by the house of the Lord where the women wove hangings for the grove. And then you read down through. Now that was the last great revival. But it's almost like when a nation is going down a tube, God gives one last man hurrah. And then after that, boom, almost straight down. So this is what Ezekiel's writing about. So he is, in verse 4, he says, behold, the glory of the God of Israel was there, okay, in this vision, according to the vision that I saw in the plain. Okay, that'd be back in chapter 3, verse 22. So he's having a vision. The difference between a vision and a dream is a vision, a guy's awake, and a dream, he's sleeping. So, you know, that's where we get the word television, okay, and so God... man figured, you know, it took man, almost 5,900 years to figure out television. God had it. He's had it all around. That technology has been available. It's just that people didn't get it figured out. And so that's what he did with Ezekiel here. He did with many of the prophets. Now in verse 5, then said he unto me, son of man, lift up thine eyes now way toward the north. Now I find it interesting, he keeps talking about this north idea, but you know, north of the Jewish temple, that would have been where Golgotha was. Out at the north gate. But okay, let's see. So I lifted up mine eyes the way toward the north, and behold the northward at the gate of the altar, this image of jealousy in the entry. So a jealous image of jealousy is some type of a statue, Baal or whatever. Okay, and of course, God's name is jealous, Ezekiel or Exodus 34:14. So this is no different than a man having a statue or a large picture of a former girlfriend for his wife to see every single day. Boy, she's going to like that. Wouldn't she like that? Or a guy's mistress, so adulteress, and he's got a picture of her, so his wife sees that every single day. Oh, she's going to be happy. She's going to have grace and all that stuff. That's like saying to God, sick him. God said, I'm sick of that. I'm tired of that. But it's in the Jewish temple. He said that, he said furthermore unto me, son of man, seest thou what they do? Even the great abominations that the house of Israel committeth here, that I should go far from my sanctuary, but turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations. Now, sometimes people say, well, sin is sin, all sin is sin, it's all equal. Yeah, but Jesus said to Pilate, the ones who delivered me unto you have committed the greater sin. There are different levels. The Catholics say venial, mortal. I wouldn't go that route. I would say spiritual and physical or fleshly. But these are pretty bad. Now, some of these fornication abominations are laid out in Leviticus 18. And, of course, that does play into this. So, in verse 7, he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, behold, a hole in the wall. So, there's a common saying. It's a little hole in the wall. So he's taken him into a secret chamber. This is not public. This is secret. Okay, this is probably in the cave system under Jerusalem, which under Jerusalem has underground streams and wells and cave systems, rooms, compartments, okay? Secret societies have these secret places where they do their dastardly deeds. Okay, and so he's given them insight. He's saying, okay, I want you to go in there. I want you to see what you're going to see. You're going to be shocked. So in verse 8, he then said he unto me, son of man, dig now in the wall. And when I had digged in the wall, behold a door. And he said unto me, go in. And behold the wicked abominations that they do here. Now, they're not able to see him, but he's able to see them. Why? Because this is done by a vision, but yet it certainly is one of them visions that you're partaking in because you're digging in a wall. Wicked abominations, verse 9. So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beast. Okay, when we see the word beast, we might think of an animal, but it might be more than that. Just might be. You have natural brute beasts in 2 Peter chapter 2. Okay, it might be, you know, unclean animals of Leviticus 11, which I might use that as a cross-reference there. I do in creeping things. It might be that, but it might be more sinister than that. And all the idols of the house of Israel, and then it says, portrayed upon the wall round about. So they have either pictures hanging on the wall, plaques, or they're actually had somebody, an artist, draw them on the wall. Okay, portrayed them. That's interesting. When he uses the word something portrayed or pictures, it's a visual thing. Okay, most of us are probably visual learners. Okay, and often you'll remember about 80% of what you see, 11%, 12% of what you hear. Well, this is why you often remember the face and not the name. And when the children of Israel came into the land of Canaan, one thing God told them in Numbers 33:52, when you come into this land of Canaan, I want you to destroy the pictures. Now that's changed in every new Bible. They take that word out. Okay, because pictures give you a visual image, your eyes grab that, and it stores it in your computer. And then the devil knows what button to push to draw that up, and he usually pushes that button when you're praying. Okay, that's the standard operating procedure. So this is portrayed on the wall, and in Romans 13:14, he says to us, make no provision for the flesh. That's what makes internet and cell phones so powerful. And when you put music to moving pictures, it makes it doubly powerful. I mean, try to watch a movie without the music. Now, you can't mute the music, the words, okay? If you just had the words, okay, and then don't throw in the music, somehow if you could get rid of the music, it'd be just like life. Boring. It's the music that moves us. Okay, so it's portrayed upon the wall. Now, what kind of people are doing this? Verse 11, and there stood before them 70 men of the ancients of the house of Israel. And in the midst of them stood Jezaniah, the son of Shaphan, with every man his censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. Then said he unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in the chambers of his imagery, the extended word of that is imagination, for they say, the Lord seeth us not, the Lord hath forsaken the earth. That's what they say. That's what they say. Now, 70 men of the ancients, okay, a general rule of life is the older a person gets, the more conservative they become. If they're honest. When you see somebody 75, 70, 75, 80, and they're still liberal, you are dealing with a wicked person. Okay, when they're that old and they're still in them liberal ranks, and that's the general rule. When a person gets older, they get more conservative. Why? It's because they've reaped some pretty rotten crops of that liberal lifestyle. Okay, and so these are 78. What are they doing in there? What are they doing in there? They're cutting deals with the devil. Okay, if you would look in Mark chapter 8, verse 35. Jesus mentioned this idea. Mark 8:36. For what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his soul? How would a person gain the world and lose his soul at the same time? He signed a deal. He sold his soul to the devil, who has the capability of manipulating people to promote this party with fame and fortune. Soul to soul. Gain the whole world. And what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? The idea is they're cutting a deal. And now some of the rock stars have admitted this. Some of the actors are now coming out to admit this. Some of them secretly will, you got to kind of listen to their words where they'll kind of let it be known that they had to do something, and that's because they cut a deal. Now, this is what the devil offered Jesus in Matthew 4, verse 8 and 9. Remember, one of the temptations? If you bow and worship me, I will give you all world kingdoms. Now, he has that capability. And so the idea in Ezekiel 8, these 70 ancients are 70 influential in religion and in politics, and they are in the hole in the wall in a secret chamber cutting a deal with the prince of the power of the air. And they're exchanging their soul for a temporarily fame and fortune. And when they sell it out like that, they have to give it in. Now, usually what's going to be required of them is a blood sacrifice. Or fornication will be involved. And other little things that goes on. Okay, so this is what these guys are actually doing in there. Is they're trying to get political power. The devil's got the capability. He's got the capability of influencing people to buy a product. He's got the capability to exalt a person for fame and fortune. Okay, and then he's going to require a payback. And if they don't keep their end of the contract, he's going to take them out. They're exchanging their soul for fame and fortune. This is the dirty secrets behind the scenes, because these people cannot really get to those political positions, especially politically, if they politically tell people what's going on behind the scenes. Years ago, Abraham Lincoln, he was a very adamant atheist, an infidel, mocked Christians. He wrote a satire, a book, mocking Christians, and a good friend of his, this was before he was elected, before he was gaining political fame, a good friend of his read the satire. He said, if you publish that, you will be ruined politically, and he threw it in a fireplace. That's what Abe Lincoln was like. He may have gotten saved, he may have, I'm not sure. When his son died when he was in the White House, he may have gotten saved, but there's a whole different take on Abe Lincoln. A guy wrote a book called The Real Lincoln. He is a contemporary of his day. And then there's another one written in the 1980s, I think, and he titles his The Real Lincoln. So they both come from different perspectives, meaning different time periods, but they come to the same conclusion. He's not as holy as people think he is or was. Okay, and so back in Ezekiel 8, these elderly men, now they're doing it in interesting, in verse 12 it says imagery or imagination. Okay, people imagine things. Genesis 6, verse 5, every man did that which is based upon his imagination, and the end result was violence, killing people everywhere. Okay, imagination. Romans 1:21, where down that road to a reprobate mind, in Romans 1:21 it says, they refuse to give glory to God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations. Okay, that's the whole root of the transgender thing. Okay, the whole idea of it. Okay, and like this young gal that, man, came out of nowhere and the media is pushing her to the top. You know, maybe she's going to get knocked down real quick here. Where she's got the Green Deal and all this stuff. Okay, the basic root of these people is an imagination, and the end result of their imagination, if you run it to the limit, is violence. Intolerant, violent people. Okay, now that's interesting. That's what Jordan Peterson said. And this lady, a news reporter, refuted him. You can't say that these people are like that. He said, it's the same philosophy of Mao. And he explained it. And any honest person would say, yeah, you are definitely right on that. She didn't want to buy into that. Okay, but that's true. Okay, so we got their imagination. Then it says, verse 13, he said also unto me, turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations that they do. You mean worse? Are you kidding? Then he brought me to the door of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north. And behold, there sat women weeping for Tammuz. Okay, not a whole lot is said about that name. So you can find little things on that in history. Alexandria Hislop wrote a book called The Two Babylons. Okay, so you got the men up there in verse 11. And then you get the women in verse 14. Who are emotional, weeping for Tammuz. And he was the child of the Babylonian mother goddess Semiramis back in the day of Nimrod. Also known as Ishtar or Easter. Okay, this pagan fable taught that Tammuz mystically revived in the spring because of the weeping of Ishtar. Therefore, the people believed that their participation in this annual rite would ensure the success of their crops. Now, this Tammuz is, they cry about that in Jeremiah 44. So he writes about that idea too. Okay, this is the origination or the basis for Easter. Okay, and the Baal worship in Egypt and all that stuff. And then verse 50, then said he unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations than these. And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and all this is taking place in the Jewish temple. And behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men, with their backs toward the temple of God, and their faces toward the east. And they worship the sun toward the east. So they're sun worshipers. So this goes in line with Tammuz and Ashtarte. And Ishtar or Ashtar is the female goddess of Baal, the male goddess, or if they're one and the same, like Baphomet. Then he said unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abomination which they commit here? For they have filled the land with violence. Yes, that's the end result. And have returned to provoke me to anger, and lo, they put the branch to their nose. Therefore will I also deal in my fury, mine eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity. And though they cry in mine ears with a loud voice, yet will I not hear them. Now, the Lord told them that in the original agreement with Moses. Okay? In the original agreement with Moses, before they accepted the agreement, God, when you have a contract, you get four parts to it. You have the contract in the four corners of the contract. You've got a presentation. Then you got an acceptance of the contract. And so when God offered this contract to Israel, like a marriage contract, the Ten Commandments is just one small part of it. He said that, okay, if you do this, I'm going to do that. If you do this, then I'm going to do that. And he says, I'm not going to hear you when it gets so bad. That idea of not hearing them, doctrinally that's the tribulation thing where he's not going to hear them. He's not going to pity them. None whatsoever. Verse 18. So, what about individual people who live in that environment, live in that culture? Is there a way out to get God's attention? And that's what chapter 9 is about. And that would be our, spiritually speaking, that would be our response to what's happening in our culture. Where in verse 4 of chapter 9, he sends his angels out and they look to put a mark on the foreheads. Chapter 9, verse 4. And what is he looking for? Men that sigh and cry. Okay, maybe a person's not emotional, he's not a crier, but a sire. Jesus did both, and I think a person can do both also. And that is telling God that this person is not reveling in these sins. He is not he's not a self-righteous person, scoffing at these people. He is sighing and crying because things have gotten so bad. And so he's trying to get a hold of God. He's begging God for mercy. Now he told Jeremiah in Jeremiah 5 verse 1, he said, Jeremiah, I want you to run through the city, Jerusalem. He said, I want you to go through the broadways. And I want you to see if you can find a man. I want you to find a man who seeks the truth and execute justice. That's all he's looking for one. Now, it appears to me that when he says seeks the truth and executes justice, he's looking in the temple, seeks the truth, he's looking at the politicians, the princes. So I don't think he's looking at everybody, because Jeremiah would have fit the bill. Okay, so it seems that that's the realm he's looking at, religiously and politically, and he said, I want you to see if you can find one. And if you could find one, I will pardon Jerusalem. Jeremiah 5:1. Now Ezekiel 22:30, he mentions about a man standing in the gap. He mentions that. So what can we do for our country as we see everything the way they are. Okay, people who are really avid supporters of Trump, you know, especially the charismatics, thinks, oh, we're having a great awakening. Sure. Politically, people are becoming more alert. But that's not what's important for a nation. They need to get more alert in regards to the Bible. Okay, they can have a great awakening in politics, but that's not going to last. The Lord is looking. The most patriotic thing a person can do for their nation right now is to sigh and cry for the sins of our nation. It's the most important thing you can do. And so when the Lord looks at that, that's the ones that he, in Ezekiel's day, he put a mark on them. Okay, and it's like when the death angel or the angel came through. It's not saying that these people didn't face troubles. Obviously they did. When you're in a culture and it's getting messed up the way it's going to be, yeah, you're going to be affected. But the Lord will give you grace through it. So that'd be chapter 9. We'll get into chapter 9 next time. So chapter 8 is the dark side. Chapter 9 is the light side. And so there's what we can do to help our nation. Okay, we'll stop there. Any questions?